Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. It was heartening to see the coverage that the death of Vicky Phelan got in the papers today. And I know it will provide some succour and solace for her family to see that she's been recognised and her work, the work that she's done over the last 4.5 years has been recognised in no small way in all the newspapers today. And everybody is coming out to say how brilliant, wonderful, courageous, brave, all the good stuff, all the good stuff, all the words, all the superlatives have been used around the descriptions of Vicky Phelan, and that's great. And I know, as I say, it'll provide some sort of comfort for the family in this very sad time for them. And there is that thing that, and you know, life goes on. And when you speak to people who get some really bad news about losing a dad or a mum or a brother or sister or whoever, or maybe getting a diagnosis of cancer, and they often feel a bit angry with the world, that the world doesn't stop, that the world continues. But that's life, isn't it? The world continues, yeah. The world continues to spin around. And as such, we are heading towards the darkest days. Literally the darkest days, because sunset this evening is at 4:30, and it's going to get earlier and earlier for the next month. But the good news is that once that month is over, we'll be looking at a stretch in the evenings. Yes, you knew that was coming, but there you go. In a month's time, it'll be the shortest day, and then we'll be looking at a stretch in the evenings, and that's always heartening. I know it's crazy to be looking forward in the middle of December to longer evenings, but I always get a little lift out of it. I don't know about you. And the Irish Daily Mail today have 20 ways to beat the winter blues. It's a long list, obviously 20, but I picked out some there. Take some vitamin D. Now, that's important, particularly with COVID and everything else. And they now know, scientists know, that we need, us Northern Europeans who don't get as much sunlight as our other people closer to the equator, we need vitamin D, particularly in the winter months. So you can buy it in your supermarket, not that expensive. Take vitamin D. Other things, bring out the blankets. Studies have shown that physical contact with softer textures makes you happier. I suppose instinctively you would have known that. Eat dinner early. Studies have found that by stopping eating 2 or 3 hours before bed, people sleep much better. Yeah, I was reading this. Find a fury friend. I said, what is that? And then I go, oh yeah, that's a typo. Find a furry friend. Studies have found that stroking a dog for just 15 minutes releases feel-good hormones like serotonin. Plants in your life, if you have room and you like them, bring some more plants into the house and be thoughtful. And every book I read now about improving our mental health, this message is there. Researchers have found that just one small act of kindness a day created a significant mood boost for the do-gooder. And even that word, even that do-gooder, it's sort of derogatory in a way, isn't it? But we now know for certain that if you're nice to other people, that it's a nice thing for you to do and you feel better because of it. Which is great. So you could say that a selfless act is ultimately a selfish act. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you do something for other people and then it makes you feel good. And it's a win-win-win-win-win. You know, for a long time during the boom times that people used to ridicule the descriptions of houses. You know, bijou was like you couldn't swing a cat in it. And then charming meant that it needed an awful lot of work. Quaint, small. And all of those. And there was a code, wasn't there? But now I see that there's a similar thing for books. And Alan Kelly, who's a professor and food scientist at UCC, retweeted this list. So it's just so you understand when you're reading a review of a book or a description on the back of it. So enchanting. If a book is described as enchanting, there's a dog in it. Heartwarming. There's a dog and a child. Moving. Child dies. Heartrending, the dog dies. Thoughtful, mind-numbingly tedious. Haunting, set in the past. Exotic, it means it's set abroad. Audacious, set in the future. Award-winning, it's set in India. I like this. Perceptive, set in North London or maybe Glasgow. Provocative, infuriating. And then it goes on to, from the pen of a master, same old, same old. In the tradition of, shamelessly derivative. Richly detailed, over-researched. Spare and taught, under-researched. Disturbing, the author's bonkers. Stellar, author young and photogenic. Classic, author hanging in there. And vintage, author past it. So there, that's a bit of fun. Speaking of vintage, there's a vintage pair of Steve Jobs Birkenstocks went up for auction. So they're from, they reckon, the 70s, 80s. They're well worn. There's a picture of them there. They look like Steve Jobs got good value for money out of those Birkenstocks. And they sold for over $200,000. And they're battered. They're well battered. And the shape of his foot is there. And I don't know who would want this and what they'd do with them. Would they wear them? Would they put them in a glass case? What do people do with an old pair of Steve Jobs Birkenstocks that they've paid $200,000 for? Answers, please, to 51551 or ray@rte.ie. There's always mixed views on Birkenstocks. And still, I don't know what it is about people who get jobs in RTE, but most of the people upstairs don't like them. They just don't like Birkenstocks. I love them, and they're so comfortable. And I had to be convinced to get a pair about 15 years ago by my wife, but I've never looked back. Never looked back. Birkenstocks. Mixed feelings on The Crown Season 5. I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment, but they're saying upstairs that it's not great. Dominic West plays Prince Charles, and his son plays his son, doesn't he? Yeah, in it, but not good reports. We're watching The War of the Worlds with Gabriel Byrne. It's on it's on Apple, I think. And there's another Irish actor in it, Heffernan. Can't remember his first name, but it's season three. It's very good. It's really good stuff, and Gabriel Byrne is great in it. He plays the part of Professor Bill Ward. And it's great. And when he gets mad, the Dublin accent comes out, which is lovely to hear. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Still on television, Henry Winkler. Henry, yeah, I know that name, Ray. This might help you along the way.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums. Ready to race to you.
Ho!
Da.
Yes, Henry Winkler played the Fonz in Happy Days back in the 70s. I didn't know this, and probably very few people did, but he was sort of considered to play the part that John Travolta played in Grease, Danny Zuko, and now he's talking about it. He's talking about the fact that he didn't play it, and he's sort of a bit annoyed at himself.
I thought, I've played the Fonz, I don't want to do it again, I'm going to submit. It has already happened. I'm already typecast. I should have just shut up and had a really good time making that movie. Now, I go home, I say no, and I have a Diet Coke. John Travolta goes home and has done the movie and buys a plane.
Hey! Hey! Yeah. You'd be kicking yourself, wouldn't you? But I was just looking at his IMDb, and that's the thing on the internet that shows you what work actors are doing. And Henry Winkler is very busy. He was in Black Adam. He's in loads of different things. But I suppose every time this comes on the radio, he's going, that could have been, should have been, would have been. You know, I could have done that. I could have done that.
Summer loving had me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast.
Change the channel. And then that comes on. And, oh, God. Yeah. In the leathers. Opposite Olivia Newton-John. I go, that would be me.
Chills, they're multiplying. And I'm losing control. Cause the power you're supplying.
It's electrifying.
This car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning!
Greased lightning!
We'll get some overhead lift and support.
For some reason, we sat down and watched it about 2 weeks ago, the whole family. And it stands the test of time, does Grease. And you know what impressed me most was John Travolta's performance. Just effortless in his singing, in his dancing, in his acting. a real talent. And I know people know that, but I suppose when you're watching those movies when you're 15, all of that stuff goes over your head and a lot more besides when it comes to Greece. But yeah, brilliant performance from John Travolta. And of course, Olivia Newton-John, amazing. And that voice and the timbre of her voice and just, hopelessly devoted to you. And of course, she was singing it to me. That's, that. You know, she was singing it to me. And then the theme tune, of course, of that. Okay, people outside, you can choose one of those songs in its entirety. So we have Grease Lightning, or even Greased Lightning. We have Summer Nights, You're the One That I Want, or Grease. So three, You're the One That I Want. Three, two, Karen, you've the... Two it is on this November day. Memories of the Summer Nights. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. What do you think, Fonz? What do you think?
Hey,
he agrees. Yeah, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. Frank's been on. I have to disagree. I'll have you know, Ray Darcy, she was singing it to me, says Frank. No, Frank, it was me. Yeah.
Guess mine is not the first.
That voice. And you know, Olivia Newton-John and Vicky Phelan, something in common. Both of them were advocates for women with cancer, and Olivia Newton-John did amazing work raising funds for a hospital which was in her name in her home country of Australia. An amazing lady. On and off the screen. Now, on the Birkenstocks, they bought those Birkenstocks to walk in the footsteps of Steve Jobs, the ultimate in living life vicariously, says Jean. And somebody else suggests, Bob says, mad scientist buys Steve Jobs shoes to extract DNA and clone them ad nauseum. Makes a good story. It does, makes a good story, yeah. That's not beyond the realms of possibility in science, that sort of thing. Stephanie says, one of my greatest regrets in life, I could have sat beside Henry Winkler at a gate in Zurich Airport, only I let an older lady take the seat. When I realised he was sitting there, I got a shock. However, I got a smile from him as a result of my gesture. I wondered, as well as the smile, Stephanie, did you get one of these?
Hey!
That's him. Beware when you see on the cover of a book, erudite. It means boring. Thanks for that. Keep those coming in. Now, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our little quiz. We call it Reeling in the Ears. Three questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And great prize this week. 'Tis the season when life is starting to get hectic. So all this week, we're giving our lucky listener who wins our quiz a chance to win a blissful two-night escape for body and mind at the wonderful Wineport Lodge. The perfect way to give yourself and someone special the gift of relaxation and rejuvenation. You will stay in a gorgeous lake view room, enjoying stunning views over Loch Ree from your very own private balcony, a delicious leisurely breakfast each morning and dinner on the evening of your choice. Get out into the fresh air of the surrounding countryside with a crisp winter's walk. You can cycle on the complimentary bikes, or you can stretch out the aching limbs with a yoga class. You also get to wrap up in those fluffy robes, you know those things, yeah, in all the posh hotels, and enjoy the pure shoreline serenity of Cedarwood Spa, where you can sink into a signature seaweed bath or use the lakeshore indoor-outdoor infinity pool. Sounds delicious. Wineport.ie, wineport.ie. Okay, here's your qualifying question today. Which 80s pop star is currently in the jungle for I'm a Celeb? Is it Boy George or Man George? Boy George or Man George? Which of them is in the jungle at the moment? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Don't look for mental health help on TikTok. That seems like advice that you wouldn't have to give, but you do. And it's the headline of an article by Coleman Nochter in The Examiner today. And Coleman joins me now to expand on this. How are you doing, Coleman?
Good, thanks, Ray.
So this is dangerous, isn't it? You don't like words like that.
it's reckless, it's for reckless, sure. Okay. Yeah, and it has consequences. Okay. No, the reason I wrote it was just something I'm seeing much more and more. You know, so you're talking to young people about things that they're going through, and they refer to TikTok as a reference point for why they might feel they... So it's an extension of the Dr. Google thing, you know. So I remember being in a GP surgery years ago, and he had a sign saying, don't mistake your Google search for my medical degree, you know. Uh-huh. And there was a kind of a sense, and he said, this is going to be a big deal. And it was. So people come to you with their own diagnosis, and they're just there for that to be confirmed, you know. But young people are kind of going to TikTok. And as much as there's some useful advice on there, I'm sure some of it is a little bit reckless from the point of view of diagnostics and giving advice. And many of these people are coming from a lived experience, which is fine, but it's probably not that generalizable from the point of view of what they're going through.
Give us an example now of, in your work, what will be said to you about TikTok.
Say, for example, somebody said, I think I have social anxiety because I was watching this thing on TikTok, and it sounds, and people say things like, it's like they're describing me. I'm exactly the same as that.
So I've never seen any of these people on TikTok, I have to say, but you felt obliged to do it because you were hearing more and more reports. What did you find?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's sometimes akin to, you know, the kind of legal ads in America, like, you know, have you fallen on a pavement? Come and ring me and I'll tell you the answer. You know, that sort of, it was kind of like, have you ever had these symptoms? Because you might have this. Have you ever had that? Because you might have this. A lot of suggestible.
So but these people aren't psychologists, psychotherapists, psychiatrists?
Many aren't, no. I mean, and again, I suppose it's other fellow teenagers maybe and young people saying this. But like, say, for example, so somebody's describing feeling an awkward situation talking to people that they didn't know, which is a perfectly normal situation. But they're accounting that as something pathological. So I must have social anxiety if I struggle to have conversations. And yes, you're anxious in a social situation, but social anxiety is a disorder that requires a degree of criteria, and, you know, that it has to be at a level. So the frequency and severity of a symptom.
Right.
Is,
so what harm can be done if you take on a diagnosis from TikTok?
Well, I think it's like you when you pathologize anything, like we've tried within psychiatry and mental health to kind of move away from the biological model of disorder and illness and trying to see things as much more formulation of the troubles that you're going through. This seems to be a bit of a step back where they're kind of handing out these kind of labels of diagnoses. If you pathologize normal behavior, then people will feel, oh, there's something wrong with me and that's why I'm struggling with that. But it also perhaps there's a risk of it absolving you from any responsibility to do anything about it because it's my condition. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So I have something, therefore I will behave this way and I can't help it.
Yeah, or that's there forever and that's not, I don't have to manage it or anything like that. And so from the point of view of, like, say, for example, if you did suffer from some kind of social worry or social anxiety, you need to kind of test yourself in that behavior and you have to get better at it and you have to become familiar with it. And
but is it more than just TikTok? Is it not right across the board that we're pathologizing normal behavior? Like, you know, I remember, like, years ago, being anxious or suffering from anxiety was never mentioned. You worried about things. I was a worrier. But that's just who you were and you got on with it.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned it, like, you know, not all worry is anxiety and not all sadness is depression.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And
right, so, well, talk to us about
that. So we use those terms, like, people say, oh, I'm so OCD, you know, and you're tidy. That's the difference. You know, just because you like things where you left them doesn't make you OCD. OCD is a far more serious and sinister condition that creates much more distress than that. People will say, I have PTSD from, you know, things. And when you throw around, you dilute the intensity of the meaning for that. You know, so from the point of view of throwing around things like, I'm so ADHD, or I have social anxiety, or, you know, and in some cases it's...
So it's, what it dilutes the effectiveness of those terms. And obviously if somebody really suffers from those in a clinical way,
They feel very disenfranchised by it. And I would find a lot of people who suffer from clinical depression and they would say, you know, they'd find some of the kind of conversation around it a little bit minimizing of their condition, or it's not the same. So, for example, you know, some of the mental health stuff would be like, go and do a 10-mile run and you'll feel better. Right. You know, if people can't lift their head off the pillow You know, that just makes them feel like more of a failure. Do you know what I mean? From the point of view that I can't do that. Or, you know, from the case of if you have an experience of anxiety that's crippling you, you can't leave the house, and someone's describing they're the same as you because they struggle in a social situation, it can kind of feel, well, that's kind of diminishing my experience.
It's about language, the use of language, though, isn't it? Is it? You know, because all of these words that weren't in general use are now in general use, so people use them generally. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and if something doesn't exist in language, it doesn't exist. Yes, you know, as soon as you put a word on something, you know, then it's a thing. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
So, but what I'm more interested in is, though, if a young person comes to you and they've decided that they've ADHD or social anxiety, that self-labelling, is that in itself a mental health problem? Do you see what I'm saying?
I think it's a symptom of where people are looking for a community of relatability.
Right, okay.
You know,
that community can be people with a similar mental illness to them, a perceived one.
And there's great, like, I don't want to dismiss the sharing a lived experience can be really useful to someone who feels really lonely, and you get a kind of, oh my God, someone else feels the same as me. And that can be crucially important, someone coming forward with
So you're talking about people telling their stories. So I suffered from depression, and they're on this and they're sharing their story.
Yes.
And we've been hearing for a long time now that that's helpful, because there was a taboo around sharing stories about mental health. So people have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the problem?
But I think it's when you kind of dilute. The TikTok thing is a bit more about kind of a sensationalised version of it, you know, in terms of it's trying to create relatability. And relatability isn't the same as reliability. Do you know what I mean? So I've worked in mental health for 25 years. I can see a lot of things that are similar, but no two stories are exactly the same. And so from the point of view of my account, may be similar to yours, but it might be completely different. Or there's, and again, it comes back to the frequency and the length of time you've suffered from that condition, etc. But if you come saying, I think I have ADHD, when you have some concentration issues, but you're also not sleeping, you have a lot going on in your life, and you're kind of saying, and it's my role to say, well, I don't think that is ADHD from my experience, then the person feels a bit dismissed, and you're saying, you're not, you know, it's like when you go to the GP and say, I think I have that, and the GP says, I don't think it is, you feel, you know, if you leave the GP's office without an antibiotic, you feel cheated, you know, in some respects. So it creates challenges where you're trying to kind of clarify what information, and saying to people, you've got the wrong information here and I don't think that's it, can sometimes feel like you're invalidating them a little bit when you're not. What you're saying is, I'm listening to you, but I'm just not agreeing with you.
Right.
And there's a difference between being listened to and agreed with, you know.
Do sometimes people take that label as being part of them? It's their identity. And you were saying earlier on about people looking for a tribe, looking for a group, looking for a community. And by giving themselves a label, albeit incorrect, that gives them an identity. And going into you then, and you saying, well, you don't suffer from social anxiety or you don't have ADHD, you're depriving them of being a member of that group which they thought they were a member of.
Yeah, I
and
definitely
that's
think
difficult,
that,
isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's tricky because, again, you know, finding identity and belonging is really important, but it's about trying to find belonging in a group that where you belong.
Yeah.
You know, there's an element of that as well. Belonging for the sake of belonging isn't necessarily that. And, like, there is a reality that, and again, this is probably a little controversial, but, you know, misery does love company in some respects. So the, you know, I've worked in inpatient units for a lot of my life, and if there's a group of young people who kind of are kind of making each other worse by creating a kind of a very gloomy, kind of bleak outlook, that can sometimes be negative in terms of someone's trying to find your way out of it. But again, and it was, there was an article in the New York Times about this as well, you know, that identity seeking as part of a community, like the TikTok mental health community, you know, trying to create an identity to fit that is problematic as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And okay, we've mentioned a couple of times now the lived experience and people sharing their stories, which I think is probably, was initially anyway, a good thing.
It is, yeah.
Because it broke down taboos and stigma, and things were been talked about that hadn't been talked about before.
Mm.
Have we reached overload or?
No, I still think we need to keep sharing the lived experience, but it's probably not, it's about having a disclaimer that, you know, this is my experience and it may be different to yours. Do you know what I mean? From the point of view of trying to, it's not like trying to recruit people into that, if that makes sense. Like,
and it doesn't qualify you to give advice either.
No, and again, I suppose from the point of view of, you can give advice around what was helpful for you, but that necessarily might not be helpful for everyone as well. Like, a great example of the lived experience was, I was recently at a thing run by the Ombudsman. Niles Muldoon had a Beyond Limits, and we had young people with disabilities, and the whole day was young people's the lived experience. It was a really brilliant experience of trying to get into the heads of what their experience was, trying to negotiate the world through wheelchairs and all these sorts of things. But it wasn't a recruitment element. It was just trying to create insight and a sense of community within that.
Okay.
Whereas if it is a bit, and the TikTok side of it is, it's about reach. You know, it's about trying to relate to as many people as possible, but it may diminish what you're trying to relate, if that makes any sense.
Like, yeah, well, they want to tell people that they've, you know, 100,000 followers or a million followers, and they will do things to get more followers. And obviously they have to make noise. They have to stand out from everybody else.
And the more extreme and sensational, the more reach you get.
Yes.
You know, so the idea that, you know, I guarantee if I did a TikTok video listing out the signs and symptoms of anxiety, it probably wouldn't get the reach that they would get. Do you know what I mean? Even though mine is factual. And I still think we struggle with popularity not being the same as reliability. You know, if you see something with 200,000 views, there's an assumption there must be something in this of truth, when in actual fact there might be something in there of entertainment or extremism or, you know, whatever that might be.
So what about parents then who may be listening today and they have a teenager who is on TikTok coming back to them and say that they have social anxiety or whatever? I'm not going out because I have social anxiety, and I know this for a fact because the man told me on TikTok.
Yeah, I get loads of emails from parents saying, my daughter feels that she needs to talk to someone about X, Y, and Z. And there'll be a proviso saying, I don't think she has that, or we don't see it as an issue, or, you know, from that point of view. And again, what you're trying to do as parents is to become a counter narrative, you know, to trying to say, well, let's research this reliably and see if you tick these boxes. But again, like if I said, oh, Ray, have you had a glass of wine for 3 nights? You know, you could have alcoholism there. That could be something that you need to worry about. You need to go and get that. But, you know, it's very easy to be suggestive or be provocative around making a very everyday experience something
pathologizing
it.
So is that in and just we
so
finish
parents
on
have
this,
to work back.
Work back from that. And like increasingly I'm having these chats with people that normal behaviour now has been treated as mental illness, you know. So stress, worry, you know, been socially awkward, all of those things that would have been just the normal thing of being human are now been given a label or been pathologized. And you, in your work, that is a problem, isn't it? So how do we pull back from that?
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's just mental illness. You can't have, you know, smelly feet with it, calling it hyperacidosis or, you know, smelly breath. So there's, and that's when there's money to be made. If there's a product to be sold, then you want more people with the label and diagnosis. And there are mental health entrepreneurs, for sure, you know, who might try and sell well-being, but you need people to be unwell to sell that well-being piece, you know, from that point of view.
And you would hope that they're not blocking up the people who aren't ill, aren't blocking up the system for people who are genuinely, clinically suffering.
And I genuinely think that's not the case.
That's not the case, right.
And what I would say is maybe this is a sign that young people are not able to access the services, and so they're turning to online communities like TikTok for advice, because if you've rang somewhere looking for help and they've said, we'll get back to you in February, then you're going to go online, you're going to look for communities, you're going to look for that self-help piece in the absence while you're waiting. And, you know, I think there is an element of responsibility that maybe we're driving young people to that because we're not providing it as adequately and promptly as we should be.
It's so good to finally hear this being said out straight. It's almost like all young people have anxiety now when so many of them just don't. Many of them have no idea what it is. They're just throwing around these huge words that's sending them into a spin over nothing, and groups of teenagers just stressing each other out over nothing.
There's a middle ground. You
know, yes, I know.
There's a lot of people who have anxiety. A lot of people have been through an awful lot for the last few years. There are a lot of young people struggling. And maybe the trying to find the label is a symptom of a struggle.
Yeah.
It's just not that struggle.
Right. It's hugely interesting. And I'm sure we'll talk about this in the future. But just be careful out there, I suppose, who's offering advice on what. Isn't that it?
Question it.
Yeah. Thanks, Colin. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray at rte.ie. We've a cautionary tale for you now. We've all got so many devices in our houses, phones and tablets and laptops and smartwatches. There's no end to the things that need charging. We've been warned, yes we have, about charging them beside the bed and overnight. Nicola McCauley from Remelton in Donegal joins me now, and she'll make us all stand up and take heed of the danger. Good afternoon, Nicola.
Hello, how are you?
How are you? Good to talk to you. How is little Dunica?
He's good, yeah. He's recovering here at the house, so he is. He's a great wee patient. He's not complaining too much. He's happy enough now. We've just done his creams and everything there again. So
right. So Dunica is six?
Yeah, he's six, yeah.
So tell us what happened.
Yeah, so it was just a normal Tuesday night. I put him on down to bed. He shares a room with his big brother. And I put him down to bed at 8:30 as normal. And then Delta went down at 11:30 and everything was okay. And myself and my husband were still, I was just going to bed around 12:00. I was just getting into bed and I heard a kind of, you know, kind of like it done again asleep. Kind of, he would sometimes, you know, muse about or talking asleep. Mm. So pass no remarks. But then 2 minutes later, I heard Delta shouting my name, and I knew the way he shouted, there was something badly wrong. So I got out of the bed and I met the two of them then, Delta in the hallway with Dunica behind him saying, "Mammy, quick, Dunica was on fire, Dunica was on fire."
Janie Mackers.
I know.
That's horrific.
Yeah, it was.
Now, What went through your head?
I don't know. I was just sheer panic. I looked then behind them and into their room, and I could see the flames in the mattress. So I just started shouting then, and the smoke alarm and everything went off then because the door had opened.
Yeah.
So I was shouting then because my husband was still up in the sitting room, and the older girls were all up in their bedrooms. So I was shouting for everybody to get out the fire. And my husband ran. He ran down the stairs here, and he started putting water on it, and I ran up the stairs. Because I knew the fire extinguisher was under the sink in the kitchen.
Right.
And I ran and got it. And I wouldn't even say it was away 30 seconds. But even in that time I got back, the room, like the flames were even bigger again. And the room was full of smoke. Now, luckily, the fire extinguisher, once I used it, it did put it out. But it wasn't till then. Then my other daughter, Michaela, said, she goes, "Mammy, Donegal's burnt."
Right.
And that's me saying then that he had got hurt.
So, how many children have you got?
I have five children, three girls and two boys.
Right, and Dooltuck is Dunica's older brother. What age is he?
Yeah, he's 15.
And they share a room?
They share a room. They had bunk beds. Dalta was the top and Dunica was the bottom.
Right.
So when Dunica had made the noise, Dalta looked down, you know, the wee gap along the strip at the top. He looked down and seen the flames, so he jumped out of his bed and grabbed Dunica and then was able to alert us.
Well done, Dooltuck.
I know.
Yeah. Well, you know, because sometimes you'd be frozen, wouldn't you, when something like that happens?
That's it, exactly. You don't know how you'd react.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
So your husband got the water, you got the fire extinguisher, and you managed to extinguish the flame.
Got it out.
Which is brilliant. And then you can start thinking about little Dunica and how he is. So was there an ambulance rung for?
No, you know what? It was, because where we live, it's probably quicker for us to actually head in. We're only 10 minutes out of the town. So I seen the jammies that were melted, but they weren't stuck to him. So what I done was he got into the back of the car with Brianna's other sister, and I drove up and we went straight in through casualty. Now, the receptionist seen us coming and she was just put us straight in through, and we were sent just straight down, and the nurse met us and brought us into a wee room, and they started getting the bandages and everything on him, and got him the pain relief.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of his blisters there. They're nasty, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, it was his wee mattress, or his wee duvet had melted, because it was his toe, it melted and melted into his head.
Whoa. So he had a Thomas the Tank Engine duvet cover there, I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
and that was burnt in. And
yeah.
So, he's burnt on his lower leg and his and his head as well. Was his head?
His head and his foot as well.
Right.
How he's even escaped with that? Because his duvet, because he lies curled up in a wee ball in his duvet.
Mm.
So and even looking at his pajamas, we're so lucky that it wasn't a lot worse than it was.
Okay, so when you knew he was safe, then of course you start thinking, how did it happen? What caused the fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, as I said, my husband, he had said he had taken everything out, and I put it actually everything outside that night just to make sure, just he was afraid it would reignite.
Yeah.
And it wasn't then until it was, maybe it was the next day, I'm not sure, but we went out and we could see then that the charger was melted into part of the mattress, okay. The lead of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it was, we won't name the charger,
no.
But it was a charger for a mobile phone?
It was for his, his tablet.
A tablet, right. It was a charger for a tablet, and mm-hmm. it was the one you bought with the tablet, so it was...
Yeah, it was a genuine one that came with it, yeah.
A genuine one, okay.
Yeah.
The specifics of it were that the tablet wasn't plugged in, so you had
no.
You had the plug in the wall and you had the lead or the cable coming out of it and nothing connected to it.
Okay. Yes, that was it. The tablet had been charged earlier on in the day. I always take the boys' devices. I don't allow them in bed.
Yes.
So the tablet and everything was in my room, actually just sitting in my room, so there was nothing connected to
it. And the plug was beside the bed?
Yes, plug was beside the bed.
And it overheated, obviously, went on fire, and then spread to the duvet and the... Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And have you any idea how long that would have been plugged in?
Would have only been that day. Would have been plugged in earlier on to charge it, because we don't normally charge it down in the room.
Right, okay.
So
the reason you're on telling your story is to warn people, isn't it?
It is, you know what, because everybody's guilty of doing it, unfortunately.
Yes.
And you do hear the reminders, you know, don't you? You know you're not supposed to do it. And I'm just kind of telling people, you know what, just try and get into the habit, especially now coming up to Christmas, because there'll be lots of new devices coming to the houses.
Yes.
To get in the habit, you know, when you're done charging, unplug it or turn it off.
I'm just looking there. We got onto Dublin Fire Brigade, and they've issued advice. And the first line there is, which you're covered, it says only use devices that carry the genuine CE safety mark.
Yeah.
And buy them from reputable retailers. So you're covered there, because obviously it's the brand one, and I know the brand, and they're a very reputable brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do say don't charge overnight while you're asleep or leave your home. Never cover a charging device with a pillow, cushion or blanket. Let the heat dissipate. So was there any way that the heat was being caught? No?
Well, that's what I'm presuming. That's what we're presuming, that it must have, you know, been beside the bed. And that's maybe what caused it.
Yes, yeah. It was restricted. You see, that's the thing.
See,
if you've any airflow around anything, it just lets it cool down. And that's sure. So,
and I know there's lots of houses too. They've said that they charge their phone overnight beside the bed, and it's just...
Don't do it.
That's
it. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Dublin Fire Brigade say it. I'd say the manufacturers of all of those would recommend that you don't do it overnight as well. And as you say, we're all guilty of it. But now we should listen to Nicola McCauley and take heed. So little Dunica now, I'd say does he know how it started and...
He knows it was the charger, but like at the minute, neither of the boys are ready to go back into the room. They're not ready to sleep there. Donegh has been sleeping beside me, and Delta's been sleeping up in his sister's room.
Right.
But even now, Donegh will not let me even have my phone in the room.
Right.
Even though no charger, he doesn't want to even have the phone beside me. So he is aware.
Yeah.
Of how it happened.
And you've probably gone through the what ifs, have you, Nicola?
Oh, we have.
So there's loads of hugs going around, I'd say. Is there?
Oh, there is. And I'd say as we're saying to Delta, like, he really was a hero. He saved the whole house, like, if he had no oak.
Yeah.
And reacted the way he did.
We might be talking about it next year when he gets a Garda Síochána Youth Award or something like that, one of those awards that people get for saving other people's lives, because he's a little hero. And Dunica's a little hero as well. You say he's a great, great patient.
He is. You know, that's if it was any of us ourselves, we would be lying down going, oh, I'm so sore, but he's been really good.
Right. Okay.
He's missing school, that's the only thing, but...
He's not in school.
He's not. We can't even get shoes on his wee foot yet. He'll catch up.
He's only six.
He will indeed.
Nicola McCauley from Remelton, thanks for sharing that story. And as I say, it's a cautionary tale. And don't, please, people, charge things overnight. Thanks, Nicola. Thank you.
All right,
bye
thank
now.
You
bye,
now.
Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Christy's been on. The worst thing anyone can do is use a spurious charger for charging phones and screens. Please use an Apple charger for an Apple product, a Samsung charger for a Samsung product, and so on. Stay away from spurious chargers. I've never heard them described as spurious chargers before, unless you can stand over them while charging, says Christy and Tala. Well, Nicola's charger was a reputable charger, and it was bought with the tablet, so that wasn't the cause of that. Now, as you know, or maybe you don't know, we partner with the RTE Radio 1 5th Annual Folk Awards. They're taking place this Thursday night in Vicar Street, presented by John Creedon, and a great way to celebrate the best of Irish music. And we've had lots of the nominees on the show, and they've asked us, would we partner with them and play the nominees for the best original folk track? And we said yes. That's what we said. We said yes. So we played two already. Susan O'Neill's Now You See It, which is lovely, and Cormac Begley's To War, which, as the title suggests, would get you up and running and bring you to war. Today is the turn of actor and singer Jessie Buckley. And we had her on earlier in the year, amazing singer, and she was here with Bernard Butler. And during lockdown, they wrote an album together and recorded it, I think some of it remotely. It's a beautiful album. And Footnotes on the Map from that album is a nomination for the Best Original Folk Track. And the album is called For All Our Days That Tear the Heart. So Jessie Buckley and Bernard Butler, and one of the nominations for the Best Original Folk Track. Here we go. That's pretty beautiful, isn't it? Footnotes on the Map, Jessie Buckley and Bernard Butler, one of the nominations for the Best Original Folk Track. And the winner will be announced on Thursday night live, and it's on the radio as well, from Vicar Street, as part of the RTÉ Radio 1 5th Annual Folk Awards. And good luck to everybody who is nominated, and we'll be listening in on the night. Speaking of awards and all that sort of thing, I didn't mention yesterday for obvious reasons, but on Saturday I was down in the Midlands Park Hotel in Portlaoise for the Garda Síochána National Youth Awards, and it was a lovely afternoon stroke evening. And people, young people from all over the country were recognised and awarded for things they had done within their community. Some of them were individual things, like saving people's lives, and that's why I mentioned it there when we were talking to Nicola. And other things were groups who went out and did things, like there's a couple of lads up in Letterkenny who went out and made sure that all the OAPs in their locality had functioning smoke alarms, which ties into Nicola as well. And then there were a number of groups who were Ukrainians living here who then set themselves up as sort of welcoming committees for Ukrainian refugees since the war began back in February. And there was loads of other things as well. And just it was a lovely, positive event, well organised. And congratulations to everybody who won a Garda Síochána National Youth Award on Saturday in Portlaoise. Anish Toshi now in the Prieskelton in Oakdale, Mary Nihulawan. Grandma, good Marion, thank you very much. 51551ray@rt.ie. We have two quizzers standing by and a prize. And this week, we say thank you very much to the wonderful Wineport Lodge, wineport.ie. They're giving us a two-night stay for two people. The perfect way to give yourself and someone special the gift of relaxation and rejuvenation. The winner will stay in a gorgeous Lakeview room, enjoying stunning views over Loch Ree from their very own balcony. A delicious leisurely breakfast each morning and dinner on an evening of your choice. Loads of things to do. Go out for a walk in the fresh, crisp winter air. Go for a cycle on the complimentary bikes or stretch out aching limbs with a yoga class. And there's a spa there as well. And there's an indoor-outdoor infinity pool. You can find out more at wineport.ie. Hello, Teresa. Hello, Teresa. Earth to Teresa. Come in, Teresa. Can we make contact?
Sorry, Ray. No, sorry, I had it on mute.
Oh, yeah. Of the two options, that's the preferable one, Teresa, because somebody was telling me a story recently where they were on a call to somebody and they thought they'd muted it, but they hadn't. And they had a stand-up row with somebody in the room with them, and the person could hear every last word of it, which wasn't. So at least when you're muted, you're safe. How are things today, Teresa?
I wasn't saying anything bad about you. Yes. You didn't hear me.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Yeah.
You're good. And you're in St. Phelan's Boys' School, and you've been working there for 9 years.
Yeah.
I have a picture of you going around with the headphones on. Go on. The headphones.
Yeah. And you're headphones.
Listening. Yeah, you're listening to Radio 1, yeah.
With me brush and me mop bucket and me mop.
And you're happy out.
Listening to Ray Darcy.
Yeah, there you go. So tonight, it's not the final of the Great British Bake Off for you. It's what? Line dancing, it says here.
That's Sorry. Yeah, line dancing. Every Tuesday night.
Right. And you bring your partner, Patsy Long. How's he?
No, he doesn't come line dancing with
Does
me.
He not? No.
We go dancing on a Sunday night, but Patsy, he doesn't dance.
Right. But you drag him along
music,
anyway.
He does DJing, but right. He can't dance.
Okay. Right. So when you bring him along then on Sunday, what happens?
He drinks the pints and I do
the
dancing.
Oh, right, so he watches you.
Yeah.
That's very good of him. <That's> So, who else is at home? There's yourself, Patsy, and there's a dog, is there?
There's a dog and a cat and a goldfish.
Right, so...
And the children are all married and...
Gone. Yeah, just yourself.
But they're not gone too far.
Right, which is great.
Sometimes...
Yes.
Sometimes it's great when they're close. Sometimes and babysitting.
That was my next question. So you have grandchildren?
Nine,
right. Yeah. Varying in age from what to what?
From 20 to 2.
Right, that's a lovely...
The eldest is 20 and the youngest is 2.
So you have a lovely mix of grandchildren there.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. Keep you young, that and the dancing. Okay.
And the cleaning.
And the cleaning. You're up against Daniel Kelly in Port Leash. How are you doing, Daniel?
Phelan.
Sorry.
Hello, Daniel.
No, it's Phelan. I don't know where I got Daniel from.
Hi, Ray.
Sorry, Phelan, you've changed. It was Daniel Kelly, now you're Phelan O'Rourke. How are you doing, Phelan? Where are you?
Hi, Ray. How's it going? I'm driving back from Cork for work. I'm somewhere in the Midlands, near Port Leash, pulled in.
Right. And where are you heading to?
Back to Selbridge.
Right. And who's at home when you get there?
When I get home this evening, my wife Fiona and 5 kids waiting for me.
Right. Ages?
8, 6, 5, 3, and 6 months.
That's a busy household.
Very.
Yeah. So you work.
Good fun, but busy.
But you work outside the house and you stay away as much as. No, I'm joking.
I do a bit of farming when I get home, yeah, just to.
Oh, you farm as well, do you?
Yeah.
Wow, busy. What class of a farm is it?
Dairy farming.
Right. And then there's football training as well.
Football with the kids, yeah. And my wife was playing football actually the weekend. She plays football as well. And they were beaten in the Leinster final on Sunday, unfortunately.
Who did she play for?
Screen ladies. Screen ladies. They were beaten by Longford Slashers at the weekend. So,
right. Commiserations there.
We wish them Longford the best of luck in the Ireland semi-final.
Yeah. So, well, they did really well then, didn't they?
Oh, they did, yeah. They won Meath and they were beaten in the Leinster final. So, yeah. It was a great year.
Great year. Yeah. So, your wife plays football at that level and 5 children. It's a, you know, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
It's busy, all right, yeah.
Yeah, great stuff.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, right, Phelan, you're up against Teresa. Sorry for calling you the wrong name. I'll just tell you the rules. So 3 questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points because it's more difficult. And whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if the draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. So, Teresa, the year is 1990, which is 32 years ago, and we're starting on the telly. So, do you want a long clip or a short clip?
No, I go short.
Short, okay.
I don't know it or not.
This crime drama set in New York had its debut in 1990. Can you name it? Here's the short clip.
Pretty soon you're going to have a number.
You're under arrest for the murder of Andrew Winter. You have the right to remain silent.
No.
No idea. Do you want to take a guess? Crime drama set in New York.
NYC?
No. But it was worth a guess. Law and Order, we were looking for.
Law and Order.
It's currently in its 22nd season, believe it or not. Okay, Phelan. Telly from 1990. What do you want to do?
Go long, Ray, please.
Go long. Okay, this Californian-based comedy first hit the small screen in 1990. Can you name it?
Did you enjoy the trip?
Oh, yo, the plane ride was stupid. I was up in first class.
Excuse me?
No, I was saying the plane was dope.
Excuse me?
No, stupid, dope. Oh, no, that doesn't mean what you... How would he...
The flight was really neat.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, would you take Will to his room, please, and help him get settled in?
Yes, madam.
I see.
Well...
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
It is the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, yeah. Starred Will Smith as a young lad, and you get a point for that. Okay, Teresa, music from 1990.
I'll say Short.
Short again, right. This song was a hit for this American vocal group who released it as their first single from their self-titled album. Can you name the song or the band? Here's your short clip.
Why do you lock yourself up in these chains?
No.
No. It was Short, but that's the, it says it's
very
short.
Short.
It was short.
Very short.
That was 6 seconds, believe it or not. Yeah, we were looking for Hold On, Wilson Phillips.
Oh, Hold On, I yeah. No, I wouldn't have got it. No.
Wouldn't have got it, okay. No. Now, where are we at now? You have no points on the board, Therese, unfortunately. Phelim, you've won. If you go for a two-pointer here and you get it right, Therese can't catch you. If you go for a one-pointer and get it right, well, then Teresa could go short, get it right, and then it's up to you on the last one. So what are you going to do, long or short?
I'm going to go long again, Ray.
Okay,
play
right.
Play safe.
Strategic, yes. Widely considered his signature song, this artist released this from his third album in 1990. Can you name the song or the singer? Long clip.
Give me a song or rhythm, making them sweat. That's what I'm giving them now. They know. You talk about the hammer, you're talking about a show that's hot and tight. Singles are sweating so fast.
Well,
MC Hammer.
Yes. You can't touch this.
Can't touch this, yep.
Yeah, baggy trousers. Right, you're on two. Teresa, you're not out of it yet. If you go short now and get it right, and then Phelim falters on his final question, then it's a draw and we go to a tie-break question. So let's see how we do. Are you going to go short?
Yes.
You sort of
short.
Have to. Yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. News and current affairs from 1990. Services and businesses closed their doors so staff could enjoy what major event that took place in the summer of 1990? Okay, short clip.
There will be no buses in Dublin City after 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. And most of the city's main cinemas are closing at tea time.
The World Cup?
Yes, the World Cup!
Yes!
Back in the net! Back in the net! Don't Teresa. From the ashes. She came from the ashes.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So it's a draw now for the next couple of seconds. And it's up to you, Phelim. If you get anything from this, you're today's winner. However, if you get nothing from it, then we go to a tie-break question. Just before we go, that was obviously Charlie Bird, and he was reporting about the quarter final where Ireland played Italy in Rome, and they beat us 1-0, didn't they? And we were out of that, but we did really well. Okay, Phelim, last question, news and current affairs. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go long again, Ray.
You're going to go long again, right? Why break the habit of an afternoon? Okay, a new music festival held in Seville Stadium was not to everyone's taste, as demonstrated by this caller to Jerry Ryan in 1990. Can you name the event he's talking about? Long clip.
Most people, I'd say 90% of the people I've seen were drunk. They were falling all over the place. I tell you, Jerry, we were going through the street, I tell you, at the end of the night. We just went away, I tell you, I went away from the place in tears. If you would put labels on it, it was like the devil's playground.
Can you understand that there may be some people listening this morning who think that you're describing a fabulous weekend?
What was he talking about?
The failure, the trip to tip.
He was. I think you're the first one who's won with three ones, but you've done it. It was strategic, but it worked for you. Three plays, two. Teresa, sorry about that. You rallied at the end, but it was too little, too late. We're going to send you out one of the brand new Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cups.
Oh, lovely. I'll have my coffee.
Exactly.
Break,
yeah. Ideal for it. Great talking to you, Teresa. Keep dancing. Keep her late.
Thanks,
see you.
Ray.
Bye now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Phelim, well done. And you.
Thanks very much.
And the person of your choice, which I hope will be your wife. You didn't give her a name.
Well, Fiona, she has a birthday coming up just after Christmas, and this will just come in just lovely now.
And the present you had planned to buy, obviously.
Oh yeah, I was going to do it anyway.
So you can go to wineport.ie, and you'll have a brilliant time there, yourself and Fiona, wineport.ie. Well done.
Ray, thanks very much.
Good talking to you, Phelim. Mind yourself.
Thank you.
Safe home. See you. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Oh, here we go. Any excuse to play that. Last September, Siobhan Doyle was in with us ahead of the All-Ireland final between Mayo and Tyrone. After she explained to us that what a schmozzle was all about, and then she went on to explain that she's putting a book together about a history of the GAA in 100 objects, and she was looking for people to send in pictures of stuff they might have had in attics and bars and museums around the country. And they did, and Siobhan went around the country, covered thousands and thousands of miles, got her 100 objects, and she has a brilliant book available to buy in bookshops now, A History of the GAA and 100 Objects. And Siobhan joins me now in studio. Good afternoon, Siobhan.
Thanks, Ray. I wish that music could be played every time I enter a
room. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's energising.
Yeah. It'd give you a lift.
Yeah. I'm thinking of getting, you know, strapping a little speaker.
Yeah.
To my, you know, one of those Bluetooth speakers.
You can have your own theme music everywhere you go.
Because I went out trick-or-treating with my son, and he's into Elvis, and we gave him a little speaker on his belt. And when he knocked on the door and the person came, we played an Elvis song.
Brilliant.
I was standing outside with Spotify on it, pressed it. But imagine that every time you walked into a room, you had your theme tune.
Bring it on.
Do you know, like boxers have their walk-in music? Yeah. So that'd be yours.
Yeah, one of them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Siobhan Doyle. Yeah. Hey. It's this part of it. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one, yeah. Congratulations on the book. There's loads of things in it, obviously, 100. But first, to you, and you're a historian with a particular interest in the GAA, and that came from your childhood experience.
Yeah, definitely. Big GAA households, matches every weekend on the telly, or we go to them, and every weekend our days are dictated by what matches on the telly, what time it's on.
Yeah, so the dinner was early or late, depending on what time the match was at.
Yeah, so we'll have a good run at the day.
That's short to say. And is it a generational thing? Because your grandfather was heavily involved in the GAA in Kilkenny.
Yeah,
but you're Wexford.
I am born, bred and buttered in Wexford. Mam's from Kilkenny. Her father died in 1968, so she didn't know him very well. But he was a big GAA man, chairman of the Kilkenny County Board. And because the GAA is the only reason that we actually have photographs of him. Ah. So he was a selector on a couple of Kilkenny minor teams, and we have photographs of him in Croke Park on the pitch with the team and things like that. We wouldn't have any photographs of him otherwise.
What was his name?
John Lonergan.
Right, okay.
And the year after he died, there was a trophy put up in his name, a shield, I think it was the junior hurling championship was played for. And that's perhaps the only material possession that exists of him, but we don't know where it is.
Oh, but it's out there somewhere.
I don't know if it's out there. It could be in an attic. It could be hidden away. It could be proudly on a dresser. We haven't a clue.
Any idea what it might look like?
I presume wooden, with, you know, the silver engravings.
Right.
Yeah,
the John Lonergan shield.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking 60s and 70s it would have been in
circulation. And it was Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Kilkenny.
Yeah, Kilkenny,
and it was a club tournament. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that'd be nice to find that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, but sure, look, it'll probably be hard going trying to find it, but I'll keep going as a historian, I'll keep digging.
Yeah, well, we're on shields and trophies. There's an interesting collection of them in the book, and the banner, that goes right back to when one of the first games, they won a banner of sorts.
Yes.
In Clare, is that where they got the name, the Banner County? No, nothing to do with it.
It's part of the story, yeah.
Is it
definitely
right?
Is, yeah. Okay. So in 1888, Tulla won a tournament, and there wasn't really any cups then, so they won a flag. and afterwards, it was paraded around the streets, and it's now in the Cnocnaguíha Community Centre and proudly displayed there.
But it is a banner. It's called it's a banner.
Yeah.
And where does the Banner County come from? You don't know. Next.
Some historian says you.
No. You can't possibly know everything.
I tried though.
And I'm going off script. So when you were here the last time, you put out a call for things, and you got one particular thing, and it's in the book, and it's a Gaelic football hanging from a string.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine how unremarkable does that sound, but yes. It's a brilliant story. So after I was on the show, a woman called Mary O'Dwyer got in touch with me. She is from a place called Knockcrockery, just outside Athlone. And her father was a very famous man in Roscommon GA folklore, Jimmy Murray. And in 1943, Roscommon got to their first ever senior All-Ireland final. They won it. They won it the year after, and they never won it since. So that's why he's still and always will be a legend. But their family were very much involved in the community. They ran the local shopkeepers, the local pub, the local undertakers. So, you know, it must have been very difficult for Jimmy preparing for the match and having to encounter everybody. But Jimmy captured the football from the 1943 All-Ireland and kept it in his pub just over the bar, hung it from a lace on the ceiling. And, you know, it was always a good talking point and a good way for him to talk to his customers. But in 1990, the pub went on fire and the fire brigade arrived. And knowing the significance of knowing that football was there and knowing the significance of that, one of the firemen grabbed the football, threw it out the door and said, I have the football. And Jimmy says, will you fight the fire, please?
I'd say there's another F involved
So Jimmy, before that, Jimmy had got all his teammates to sign it, but the fire damaged the football. So, you know, the signatures were faded. So Jimmy went over them again on the permanent marker. Jimmy died a few years ago, but the football is still there. So there's still a very big piece of him very much present in the pub. And there's a statue hopefully being erected in the village to his memory next year.
Brilliant. And you worked in the GAA Museum and you worked alongside Mr. Flynn. What was his first name?
Tommy.
Tommy Flynn. Tommy Flynn's from Longford.
Yes.
And of course, the brilliant thing about GAA, it gives you that sense of place, doesn't it? And not just county, but parish.
Yeah.
So he's front of house and loads of tourists come in on this particular day.
Yeah, loads of tourists come in from all over the world and we greet them and, you know, trying to make a connection and get to know them before the tour so that we know how to tailor to their knowledge and experience. So one day Tommy was front of house and this couple from France comes in and Tommy says, "Where are you from?" They said, "We're from France." Very broken English now. Yeah. It was their first day arriving in Ireland. And they said, "We're from France." And Tommy says, "All right, I'm from Ballymahon." You know, as if that would make any difference to a couple from France just after landing in on the Ryanair flight.
I'm from Ballymahon.
But, you know, Ballymahon is such an important part for Tommy. It's an important marker of his identity.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's proud to fly that flag everywhere he goes.
I was always interested in county colours and club colours and their origins and where they come from. And there's a story of the Dublin blue, light blue. But there's also a story in your introduction about a set of Cork jerseys from way back.
Yeah. So some teams got to pick their colours. Like, as you said, Dublin picked blue and white and other teams came to have their colours just by chance. One of those teams is a club team, Dingle in County Kerry. And there was a man called Jimmy McKenna and he was very involved in Dingle GA and he worked in a draper shop in Cork City. And the Cork County Board commissioned a set of jerseys for Cork, but they weren't happy with the price, so they rejected them. So Jimmy took it upon himself to do a deal and to use those Cork jerseys and bring them back home to Dingle because they didn't have their own jerseys.
Right.
You know, back then it was all kind of haphazard. You know, they were homemade jerseys, jumpers they would have
knitted,
even been at the time.
Yeah.
So Jimmy brought them back to Dingle, the red and white, and that's still their colours to this day.
And there's a lovely sidebar to the story that Kerry were playing what team?
Kerry were playing Meath in the 1939 All-Ireland final. Dingle were county champions at the time. But Kerry and Meath, clash of colours, both green and gold. So the Kerry team got the short straw. They had to change their colours. So they wore the red and white of Dingle in the All-Ireland final in 1939.
There's a great pub question.
Yeah.
In what All-Ireland final did Kerry wear the Cork colours?
Yeah. I know, and Kerry be raging.
to be raging
to wear the Cork jerseys.
Well, we'll one more story on jerseys, and that's the Trevor Giles jersey.
The sleeveless jersey.
Yes.
Kind of, I would say it's kind of iconic because that was him, you know, it was in the 90s. Meath were winning All-Ireland. They were at their peak. He was at his peak. And, you know, he all of a sudden decides to cut the sleeves off his jersey.
How dare he?
I mean, you wouldn't get away with it now because there's so many protocols around.
Was it just too warm for him or what? or was he influenced by the Australian rules?
A bit of that, because there is kind of conspiracy that he did it because he was influenced by international rules, but also so that it stops players tugging the jersey, so you've less material to tug the jerseys. But right. I don't know, you'll have to get
and
Trevor.
It's there. One of the 100 objects.
It's there, one of the 100 objects.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Sam Maguire. Now, this is close to my heart, and it's historic because Kildare were the first county to win the Sam Maguire.
Yeah, you'll always have that.
Yes, we haven't won it since, but we were the first. Who was Sam Maguire?
Sam Maguire was very involved in London GAA, actually. Right. He was a great friend of Michael Collins and they would have palled around together in London. And when he died in the 20s, his friends put up a trophy in his honour based on the Arda Chalice in the National Museum of Ireland. And now he's a household name.
Yes. Yeah. And there are many Sam Maguires around the place.
They are. So not a lot of people know that every year the captain of the All-Ireland winning team gets a miniature of the Sam Maguire trophy. Same goes for the hurlers. They get a miniature of just the captain now. They get a miniature of the Lee McCarthy as well. And the first miniature was given out in 1943 and it was given to Jimmy Murray of County Roscommon.
Wow. One of the first things is a hurl from way back in the 19th century. And what I noticed from that is that the All-Ireland final in that year was on the 16th of November, which is tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
So it wasn't a summer thing.
No, and I suppose at that time, you know, there was very few structures around the fixtures and the championships and that kind of thing. So it was kind of haphazard the way they happened.
21 aside.
Yeah. And, you know, there was an awful lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot of agreement with the rules because, you know, the GAA was only getting going. So there was a lot of teams walking out of matches and abandoning matches and down in tools and just refusing to play because they wanted to play by their rules and the other team wanted to play by theirs. So.
And the other thing that used to happen was that whoever won the county represented the county.
Yeah.
So there wasn't the best of the county. It was just the club that went on to represent the county.
So then it took until the late 1890s for the county teams to comprise
of people from
different clubs. Exactly.
Yeah. And there's loads of great stuff about Bloody Sunday and there's bootlaces there and glasses of Annie Burke. And it's such a lovely book.
Thank you so much.
And it takes you through the history of the GAA in a lovely way that's never been done before. A history of the GAA in 100 objects. It sort of half started here. Well, the football on the string did. Siobhan Doyle, great to see you again. And good luck at the book. And that'd be a perfect present. Can we say that? Is it too early? Perfect present for the GAA aficionado in your life. Is it possible to ask your guest? We have 20 seconds. Is it possible to ask your guest, has she ever come across a left-handed hurley?
No.
Yes or no? Okay, no as it is. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. Sorry, Sarah isn't there. Cormac's on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.